Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. We are, we're recording this on Sunday, January 19th. This will go out tomorrow. But man, Pete, we're like past one keeper deadline. We had another coming up next week. The auto new keeper deadlines are coming up in 11 days, 12 days. It's like, I feel like everything is like taken off all of a sudden in my leagues. A bunch of leagues that were quiet are not anymore.
Yeah, it's about damn time, man. Honestly, it's so refreshing to have baseball back and deadlines and trades happening that like the ones we're going to discuss today. I'm so tired of watching the referees win games for the Chiefs. I'm ready for some baseball here.
Yeah, it's you know, it's much more fun to just watch the Dodgers sign everybody than to watch. Oh,
so annoying.
It's like this morning, by the time I woke up, the Tanner Scott to the Dodgers news had already broken. But the way I learned about it was I logged into the Auto New Slack, and the first two things I saw were like, see if I can pull it up again. Oh, where is it? But it basically was like, Tanner Scott is expected to decide today, and like, here's a team that thinks they might have a shot at him. Tanner Scott has signed with the Dodgers. It's like, yeah, it's just repeatedly how this is going. It's sort of fascinating. Here it is. Cubs have made a substantial multi-year offer to Tanner Scott. Much more was copied in from a tweet at 6 this morning, Pacific time. And before 8, breaking Tanner Scott and the Dodgers have agreed to a 4-year, $72 million deal. And it like, you know, the way I learned about it doesn't mean this how it went down, but you sort of get the feeling that the Cubs were like, all right, we'll go, you know, 4 years, $65 million. And the Dodgers were like, all right, we'll just do more.
Like, yeah.
Okay. We'll do 70.
I'm not one of those people that thinks the Dodgers are ruining the sport or anything like that. I don't think that's the case. We've always had powerful teams. They're doing something weird with the deferred money. I wouldn't be surprised if MLB gets rid of that at some point, but I look at the Braves, and I feel like when the Braves are fully healthy, which with Chris Sale and Spencer Strider coming off, Tommy John, and all the injuries all their players seem to have all the time, this may be irrelevant. I still feel like the Braves are right there with the Dodgers. We're like on paper, that is. And when you really think about that, it's actually kind of crazy. Yeah, I do. I do. I think the Dodgers obviously have a deeper rotation, and I like their bullpen a lot now, but it's not like the Braves have a bad bullpen. Chris Sale, Ronaldo Lopez, Spencer Schwellenbach, and Spencer Strider, when they're healthy, that's pretty damn good. And the lineup, I feel like we're sleeping on the lineup. They had a down across the board. Everybody last year was down for them. And I feel like they're much better than that. I still think the Braves are right there with the Dodgers.
Man, you named some good starters there. Two of those guys make the Dodgers rotation, maybe?
I don't know. That's given Sasaki a lot of run there.
But the reality is, like, Sasaki is, I mean,
a coward.
I was commenting to people the other day, like, everyone's like, oh my God, on top of everything else, I got Sasaki. And I was like, you know, we're all saying that, but like, October 1st is going to roll around and they're going to announce their division series roster, and Sasaki's not going to be on it. That's my prediction. Maybe. Because you like that division series, that 5-game series, you bring, you know, 3, maybe 4 starters in a bullpen, and he's not one of their 3 or 4 best starters.
Yeah, that's true as of right now on January 19th, but let's not forget what happened to the rotation last playoffs.
No, that's true. I think I even said if they're healthy.
Yeah.
Like my statement was, if they're healthy, this is my hot take, and I'll stand by it. If the Dodgers rotation is healthy come October, Sasaki doesn't make the division series roster and doesn't start a game in the playoffs. I think he comes on later as a bulk guy, as a mop-up guy, as a guy out of the pen who, like, maybe his arm plays up and they end up using him in, like, leverage out of the pen, sort of like Walker Buehler at times last year or something. But, like, I don't know. Like, if they're healthy, Glasnow, Snell, Yamamoto, Otani are better than him.
For sure.
And maybe Kershaw as well, because he's supposedly still going back. So we'll see.
Playoff Kershaw. I don't know. I'll take Sasaki.
Fair enough. So this is episode 158 of the Keeper Cup podcast. And the good news is I'm looking at this list of the best players to wear the number 58. There aren't, we don't have to give it to a Dodger. Chad Billingsley is actually on here, and like among guys who wore this jersey for like 5+ years, he's like the third best player ever, which is kind of wild. I guess the fourth. So that you're by Baseball Reference WAR, your best players to ever wear the number 58 are Luis Castillo has worn it for 8 years and been excellent for the Reds and Mariners. Your boy Jonathan Papelbon, many years with the Red Sox as well as the Phillies and Nationals. Doug Fister, we're getting low down the list here real quick.
Another former Red Sox.
And then Billingsley. And then you get down to Jeremy Hellickson, Justin Dusherer. Remember him?
No.
He was pretty good for the A's for a while.
Anyways. 10 WAR over 7 years.
I mean, that's what we're looking at with number 58. So
it's very clearly the Luis Castillo episode.
It is, unless you just feel like, the Dodgers get everything these days, so maybe we should give it to Billingsley just to like...
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Or maybe Castillo's going to just get traded to the Dodgers or sign with them or something. So no matter who we pick, they're going to be a Dodger.
There are rumors the Mariners want to trade Castillo, but like, what would a trade to the Dodgers even look like?
Well, if the Dodgers want a seven-man
We really need rotation. A closer. They don't even need a closer. Who knows what they need? They need nothing. I guess they need a shortstop because Mookie Betts is still their only shortstop. But
yeah, they could use a shortstop, and they could use a time machine because a lot of their studs are a little older now. But otherwise, they don't need.
Well,
anything.
It's the Chad Billingsley episode of the Keeper Cup podcast because the Dodgers get everything these days. But on this Chad Billingsley episode, as I said before, we're getting close to keeper deadlines, and so trades, keeper decisions, there's been a lot of action going on. And so we're going to go through our Keeper Cut listener leagues. We've got 3 listener leagues, 2 on Fantrax, 1 on Auto New. And we're going to talk a little bit about some trades that have gone down and give you our thoughts on who did well, what this might mean, how you should think about using these trades as sort of a basis for stuff you might do. Pete, I mean, I made a trade like hours ago. So I want to start with that because I want to get your thoughts on it. We have a new manager who just joined the Keeper Cut Listener League, the Roto League that is on Fantrax. And anytime you get a new manager, right, they're trying to shape the team to their own image, right? Who are the guys they like? Who don't they like? And this guy had a last round Jared Jones that he just wasn't that high in Jared Jones. He also wanted last round again, Byron Buxton. And like, I'll be honest, like from my perspective here, he asked about Buxton and I was like, I would take a pick. Here's 3 guys on your team I like whatever you want to do. We have talked about Buxton. We don't need to talk more about Buxton. Jared Jones, I was surprised how willing he was to part with Jones. And I am curious if that is, from your perspective, am I just too high on thinking like Jones is a really good starting pitcher with ace upside? Is that wrong?
No. I like Jared Jones a lot. He was one of those like spring training guys like Crochet and Puck. And obviously we know which one of those 3 did not work out. Naturally, I ended up with a lot of that 3rd guy. but Jones showed a lot. And then once he got his chance at the Pirates right away, he looked pretty awesome. Obviously, it got a little derailed by injuries. But I thought you did pretty well here, to be honest with you, and that he's going to be a keeper for you for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth noting that by the end of season last year, 4.14 ERA, 4.00 FIP. Like, he wasn't... He started off really well. And by the end of the year, he wasn't exactly setting the world on fire. If you look at his ERA by half, first half of the season was a 3.56. The second half, it was a 5.87. In that second half, his walks went up from 2.67 walks per nine to 3.52. It's obviously a pretty real impact, but it was a 55-point jump in BABIP between halves and a big jump in home run per nine. He just gave up a lot harder contact, it seems. And that does give me a little pause about sort of what is his long, like, that kind of second half, like, oh, now guys are squaring the ball up, could be noise, and it could be the league figuring him out.
I guess it could be. I don't know. I kind of expect every young pitcher to go through their bumps, and I think you're buying skills here, not necessarily results that have already happened. And, I mean, it's a guy who averages 97 on the fastball. His command was pretty good. I think for a keeper cost like that, I would have expected maybe a little bit more in return. Maybe this guy's a fan of Byron Buxton. You know, I mean, it's not like he gave up absolutely nothing. I know in your eyes, and I know in my eyes, Byron Buxton is kind of absolutely nothing. But still a player who has put up multiple elite fantasy seasons in the past, and he's free to keep. I say free to keep. He costs a last round pick to keep. Yeah. So maybe a little worry about offense. Maybe he thinks Buxton's going to run. It is a roto league where, you know, I think speed is a little bit more valuable. But in terms of Jared Jones and what happened to him last year, I mean, man, he had a cumulative 127 stuff plus. Like, I just think the dude's nasty.
Yeah, fair enough. The other deal that is recently gone down in that league was that same new manager traded a pick. He traded a 7th-round pick, got back an 11th. So he dropped from the 7th to the 11th and added Josh Lowe.
Okay.
Lowe is, I think, also a last-round keeper for
him. He's got to be. He was brutal last year.
I would think that he was. But is that, I mean, we talked a lot about Lowe before last year, and we're both interested in him, and it just obviously didn't go well, right? I mean, not just like performance, just was everything was sort of a problem for Lowe last year. He didn't play a ton. He didn't play well when he did play.
Her
talent, though, is legit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm having a struggle with Josh Lowe right now in the Keeper Cut Listener Otnu League. I have a $7 Josh Lowe, and I have like four other outfielders in my like OCD brain. It looks so nice in the roster organizer to just keep that fifth outfielder and have that slot filled. Yeah. And I feel like $7 for him is a little fair, because if I let him go to auction and I want him back, that all we need is one other manager to like Josh Lowe as much as me, and he's going to go over $7. I love the talent. And, you know, the barrel rate was still in that double-digit percentile. He had a 10.3% barrel rate. That's still really good. It was just the strikeout rate that ballooned. And if we chalk that up to injuries and just kind of a weird season for him, just kind of a terrible season for the Rays offensively, then I'm fine gambling on Josh Lowe. I just think in this case, and this is, you know, you mentioned this is a new manager. I think this is a huge struggle for people who just joined keeper leagues, is like every keeper league you join is going to be different than your previous keeper leagues. How do you value the picks? And I think the downgrade in picks might, like, 4 rounds from the 7th to 11th, that's a lot of picks. I mean, we're talking like 50 picks or so going by before, you know, you get to cash in what you got there. I don't know if Josh Lowe is worth it, but if he meets the upside that I think he has, and you get to keep him for multiple seasons after that, you know, I could see this deal being okay for him. It was a steep cost, but, you know, he got his guy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Lowe is a guy who walks at a decent clip, and so in an OBP league, which this is, he benefits a bit. You know, last year, even in a down year, he got just 387 plate appearances because of injuries and stuff, 10 home runs, 25 stolen bases. If he plays a full season, even being platoon, you're looking at like a 15, 20-ish kind of season with maybe 20, 30 upside.
Yeah.
And because it's an OBP league, and he actually like went the good version of him in 2023 at a 291 average anyways. But I think that with, I think if he can bring that strikeout rate back down, he should be a pretty useful player. I don't know how much, I just don't, it's not super clear to me how good that lineup is going to be in terms of how it impacts runs and RBIs, which will matter in this format. I mean, you go look at that lineup, Yandy Diaz, Brandon Lau, Junior Caminero. It's a pretty good 1-2-3, right? Especially Diaz gets on base at a high clip. And so even if the power doesn't really come back for him, like, he'll be on base to help those guys behind him. And then you've got Josh Lowe, Danny Jansen, Christopher Morel, Jonathan Aranda, Johnny DeLuca, and Taylor Wells, according to roster resource over on Fangraphs. Every single one of those guys is just like, I don't know. Every single one of those guys except Taylor Walls, who I don't think is any good. Like, he's not going to hit. But the rest of those guys, like, DeLuca was an interesting prospect. Aranda, there's still a lot of people high on him. Morel, we know what he like, that he's capable of putting up good numbers. Jansen's been good when he's healthy. Lowe had a really good season and then a really bad season. Like, that lineup could be good, but it just seems so iffy. And so, I do think that that concerns me a little bit with him.
I think this is a weird situation where I actually think the lineup being such garbage works out well for Josh Lowe. I think it's similar to O'Neill Cruz, where it's like both of these guys, you don't want them to face lefties, right? Like Josh Lowe last year, limited sample, obviously, because he was platoon, but 61 WRC plus in a 34% strikeout rate against lefties. But if you're moving down four rounds pretty early in the draft, or you're using $7 out of your budget to keep, you know, Josh Lowe, you want him in the lineup. You want him to accumulate stats. And in a long-term league, you want him, you want to see growth against lefties. I don't like writing guys off when they're 26 years old and just be like, well, they can never face lefties. I think the Rays are so bad that I think Josh Lowe has to play against lefties. And I think the Pirates are so bad that I think O'Neill Cruz has to play against lefties, not to keep bringing him back into this. He's just another difficult decision I have to make. But who else are the Rays going to, you know, when they're facing a lefty, what are the Rays going to do? They're going to take Josh Lowe out of the lineup to, what, move Danny Jansen into the cleanup spot? Like, I think he has to play.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think that's good. I think, you know, this is a daily league, and I suspect he will get benched against lefties by his manager. That's what I would do. But it is good to know you have that option. And I also think for a still relatively young player, like, those reps are useful. Who knows? Maybe turns it around and can hit lefties. Right? It's a little early to just write them off. Platoon splits are a really slow thing to stabilize. It takes a long time before we can be confident we know what a guy's platoon splits are. The one sort of caveat to that is the baseline assumption is that guys have platoon splits. It's not that they don't, right? And so sometimes we're like, oh, you know, this guy's run low BAPIPs and maybe he's just a low BAPIP hitter. And it's like, it takes a long time for that. You know, we should assume a league average BAPIP. And so you start to regress that up. With the platoon split, the assumption is there is a split there. The average hitter in Major League Baseball has a platoon split. It's bigger for lefties than it is for righties. So it's not like, oh, he's young, you know, we shouldn't just write him off against lefties. And you shouldn't write him off against lefties, but the most likely outcome is that he won't be very good against lefties. Like, that's just the reality of baseball.
And that's 100% correct. And, you know, I don't expect him to, like, get much better against lefties, but most players in baseball also aren't platoon players. So, like, is Josh Lowe so bad against lefties that he literally can't play against them, or can he get better? At Chad, his ADP, not to, you know, spend 45 minutes on Josh Lowe, I'm going to have no Josh Lowe this year. His ADP is 166. Are you taking him at 166?
No, probably not. I'm trying to think of, like, I don't draft enough to have a good sense of what else is going on around there, but it sounds too high.
I can't believe he's a top 200 player even after last season. And I love Josh Lowe, so I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but he's substantially, he's five picks, so half a round ahead of Nick Castellanos, and you're going to hate this. He's even more picks ahead of Parker Meadows.
I love Parker Meadows.
I know you do. I mean, Parker Meadows or Josh Lowe?
Oh, I would take Meadows.
Yeah, I don't know. His ADP's, I feel like there's no, oh, look, he was going as a top 100 player last year, so I guess there is a discount, but man, he was brutal last year. To see a top 200 pick for that track record and how bad he was last year, it's a little surprising.
Yeah, I'm sort of curious if he's going, yeah, in Fantrax, it's 185. I look at the, but even there, like, so outfielders with ADP, there's no one, like, like a round, like half a round in front of him. But if I go, so 169, so round and a half ahead of him, you can get Tyler O'Neill. And I would pay a round and a half premium for Tyler O'Neill.
I was going to use him as a reference as well, Chad. He is, he's 20 picks behind Josh Lowe on NFBC.
Yeah. 20 picks behind him.
20, he, Tyler 20 picks later. 80, yeah, 20 picks later. He is ADP 186 and Josh Lowe is 166.
Wow. They're basically flipped on Fantrax. 169 for O'Neill, 185 for Lowe. That's interesting.
That's how it should be, I think.
Yeah. The next guy after O'Neill among outfielders is Pete Crow Armstrong. That's like Pete Crow Armstrong at 178 versus Lowe at 185. They seem really similar to me. Right?
Yeah.
10 to 15 really... home runs with a shot at 30 stolen base upside.
Yeah, I think PCA is more of a lock for the steals to meet that high number, but
and for the playing time, right? PCA is going to be in the lineup.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I still think even if Josh Lowe ends up, you know, platooning more than we even think, he's still going to outslug PCA.
So then 187 is Cary Carpenter.
I know how you feel.
Yeah. Me and my Tigers, for whatever reason.
Yeah, seriously.
193 is Elliot Ramos. Now, it's like, yeah, but then you get into, and I'm going to skip over a few names. You do get Parker Meadows at 204, almost 205. We talked about Jorge Soler the other day. He's going almost at 220.
I think
I'm totally different Soler. Profile than Lowe.
Yeah, but I think I'm still taking Soler over Lowe. There's just more steals in baseball now. They're not as hard.
I agree. If you want the steals, Tommy Edman going at 210.
Right.
And I know Edman's going to hit late in the lineup, but like if you're hitting like eighth or ninth or whatever in that Dodgers lineup, you're not going to get as many plate appearances if you're hitting earlier, but you're going to score like every time you get on base, right? Like he's going to get on base and it's going to be like Ohtani, Betts, Freeman. Like it's just,
yeah.
Yeah.
Literal so, all-star team. Look, I love Josh Lowe. I hate that this turned into a negative Josh Lowe thing, but I think a 166 price tag is insane.
Yeah. All right. So now that we've accomplished clarifying that Pete hates Josh Lowe now, let's look at another trade. Because you and I made a trade in this league that has just a million names in it. Five players changing sides. You traded me Vinny Pascantino, Parker Meadows, who we were just talking about, and Hunter Brown. You got Anthony Santander and Mason Miller. Now, Miller is like, I think you said a ninth round pick cost. Santander is 22nd?
I think he's 20th.
20th. Set 20th. That Hunter Brown is 28th. Vinny Pascantino is 24th. And Parker Meadows is also 28th. I am actually now in this league... Like I was trying to get that Buxton deal to be for a draft pick because I suddenly find myself with, I think, 10 keepers for 9 spots. Mm. And Meadows is... So I do want to talk a little about Meadows because every time I dive into any data to try to be like, okay, who are my keepers going to be this year? The answer I get is that I should not be keeping Meadows. And yet, I can't imagine dropping it. But if I look at that team, let's talk a little bit about my keepers here, actually, because it sort of fits in with this trade. I made this trade because I like all three of those guys. So I have a 28th round Yiner Diaz, a 28th round Spencer Schwellenbach. I now have that 28th round Hunter Brown. I have a 26th round Tanner Bibee, a 24th round Vinny Pascantino, and a 28th round Reynaldo Lopez. Those guys are, they're keepers. They're no-brainers, every one of them. That's 1 through 6. My 7 through 10, actually my 7 through 11, because I just added Jared Jones. I have a 28th round Jared Jones, a 28th round Elliot Ramos, a 28th round Bowden Francis, a 23rd round Andrés Giménez, and a 28th round Parker Meadows. And everything every version of the data I look at, every look at whether I look at ADP or player value or whatever else, is telling me I got to drop two of these guys, and the two guys to drop are, I think, Jimenez and Meadows is sort of what it's telling me. And yet I really like both of those guys this year. And so I think, I mean, Jones shows up as basically like, I need to keep him. He should really be joining that group of six. I called that first before. Mm-hmm. I am really torn on what two to let go of Ramos, Francis, Jimenez, and Meadows.
Ramos, say the names one more time.
Elliot Ramos, Bowden Francis, Andreas Jimenez, Parker Meadows.
Yeah. The only two I really care about are Francis and Meadows. I'm not as high on Jimenez as you are. Ramos was just kind of streaky last year. I don't want anything to do with that San Francisco offense. What is the cost on Isak Paredes? Because I see him on your roster.
He's expensive. He'd be a seventh round pick. I mean, from a pure value standpoint, he's just not a very good value for me. I think I'm better off. Like, I'm better off using a fifth round pick on him, having kept someone else, right? Like, well, like, let's use Meadows as an example. Right now, by the time I keep all these guys, Meadows, let's say Meadows cost me a 21st or something like that. So I can either have Paredes and my 21st round pick, or I can have Meadows and my seventh. And like I said, even if I decide that I'm going to go get Paredes early, right? I'm going to splurge for him in the fifth. I mean, he cost me a seventh. His ADP right now, and this is with the understanding that his ADP is probably pretty skewed because it's probably been much better recently, right? I mean, ever since he got traded. But
that and this keeper league is in its third or fourth year, so inflation is.
But his ADP is 232. So even.
Yeah, I don't put any stock in that. That's okay, so, but that's like joke level. Sure, there's no way he should be
like. Let's look at other third basemen, and so there's a group of third basemen going from 94 to 110. Matt Chapman, Royce Lewis, Mark Vientos, Alex Bregman. He's after those guys, right? As much as I like Paredes, with the exception of,
well, let me ask you, if Alex Bregman goes to Detroit.
I was about to say, with the exception of Bregman, because we don't know where he's going to land. That makes Bregman a tougher call for sure. But let's just put it a different way. I think he belongs in that group. There's another couple guys going later. Jordan Westberg at 117, Junior Caminero at 120. That to me starts to be like the next guy after that at 128 is Eugenio Suarez, which to me is way too early for Eugenio Suarez. But like that's turned to me like that 120-ish, that's the 10th round. With inflation, that's maybe a 6th, 7th round, which is basically what I'd be paying for him. I think I could jump in and take him early. Like let's say a bunch of these other guys get capped or they're not available or whatever, and I get myself to the 5th round and I don't have a third baseman and he's the best one on the board. I think I could take him there and still be better off than having kept him for a seventh and lost Meadows.
Yeah, so I think I agree with that. But would it be I now I'm lost in the numbers. You said Jared Jones was added to that group of five or six.
It's six. So the seven with Jones. And almost all of these are last round picks. By the time I use up last round picks, because the way that this league works for those listening is if you keep a 28th round player and you keep a second 28th round player, you have to move up and use a 27th round pick. So these guys are all going to cost me my like 22nd through 28th picks, basically. Or Yiner Diaz, Spencer Schwellenbach, Hunter Brown, Tanner Bibee, Vinny Pascantino, Reynaldo Lopez, and Jared Jones. It's a lot of pitching.
Does he become
expendable? Because I mean, at this point, like Schwellenbach, Brown, Bibee, Lopez, Jones, it's a pretty good rotation.
That's a whole, Yeah, and it's a weekly league. So, and
with, is this week? Oh, it's five starting pitcher spots.
So,
oh,
the roto? Yeah, I believe it is. I check it weekly, so
I better double check that. I can never keep this all straight. Let's see, league rules summary.
Yeah, the head to head is daily, and the roto is weekly, which means I'd be out on Francis at that point. Honestly, I would consider Paredes over both Ramos and Jimenez. I just don't really value either of those guys. I think Paredes could go crazy, and as much as it hurts to use a seventh round pick on him, I think when you get to it and you're looking at who's going in the seventh round, you're going to feel damn good about getting Isak Paredes there. But I also understand the kind of, I'm usually the guy who says keep the fab players and keep your picks. I mean, my league history would show that in both of those leagues. I value the late guys way more, but I think in this circumstance, I'm just super, it's crazy that we've come full circle here. I'm super high on Paredes in Houston, and I just think he's going to be awesome.
Fair enough. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to our Auto New Listener League. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We're going through some trades and keeper decisions and all sorts of fun stuff. And we talked about our Roto Keeper League over on Fantrax. We also have an Auto New Keeper League. And that league's been pretty active. I think I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 trades since the beginning of January, some of which involve one or more of us. And so let's kick this off with a New Year's Eve trade. This was made hours before we turned the clocks, they turned the calendars forward. I gave up my $6 Kyle Bradish, a $3 Edgar Cuero, and a $5 Zach Geloff for a $5 Gavin Williams. This was after a lot of back and forth with this other manager. And basically came down to a situation where I think I'm probably trading. I was trying to say, think of a way to say this with like, you know, three quarters for a dollar, but that's not what I actually want to say is like, I feel like I'm trading like 3 fives for a 10, but I would rather have the 10, if that makes sense. I'm not sure like that fives and tens are the right way to say it, but like, I do think that Bradish, Cuero, and Geloff together are probably more valuable than Williams, but I think Williams plus two open roster spots and clearing a little bit of cap space and stuff like that. I just think Williams is the most interesting of these four by a decent margin.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. Was that Kyle Bradish's second Tommy John surgery?
I don't know. I don't think so. I thought it was just...
Yeah, maybe it was just his first. I don't know. He's not as young as people think. He's kind of a late bloomer. He's 28 years old. He's going to turn 29 this year, coming off Tommy John surgery. I want to like Bradish a lot. I have concerns there. I don't care about prospect catchers. I'm tired of caring about prospect catchers. I've been burned by so many prospect catchers that I just don't care anymore. And Zach Geloff, I mean, you know, I get the tools are there. He got off to such a hot start to his career in 2023, and I still feel like people need to just kind of like get over that performance, because I don't think there's a lot there, so I'd be happy to get a $5 Gavin Williams for that. The strikeout rate on Geloff last year, 34.4%.
Williams, just to talk about him a little bit, last year, you know, he was injured, he missed a bunch of time. When he came back, he was not great, right? 4.86 ERA. There's a 3.67 FIP. Now, part of that was he had a deflated home run per fly ball rate, which is X FIP, 4.12. And so you get projections from Steamer that are around that 4.12-ish range with, you know, almost 24% strikeout rate. One of the things that is interesting, so Fangraphs now has these oopsie projections that are up there. And oopsie basically takes a lot of what Steamer does and builds in stuff plus provided by, you know, Saris and bat speed and some other, I think those are the two big things. Their projection for Williams is almost half a run lower of ERA. So instead of 4.12 from Steamer, it's 3.78 from oopsie, which is basically saying that, like, if you look at his past performance, you get one thing, but if you look at his skill set, if you look at his stuff, you get a much better pitcher And that's exciting to me. And I think I that's basically what this is for me, is a bet on what Gavin Williams is capable of and of the upside of Gavin Williams. Because I think, you know, I don't think he is about to explode into being an ace, but he does have that upside. And I think he is going to be a solid number two, number three type starting pitcher for the Guardians. And that'll be really useful for me in fantasy.
Yeah, this is the type of trade where, like, I wouldn't be surprised if all four players are irrelevant in 365 days. Well, I would be a little bit in Guerrero's case because he hasn't even debuted yet. But again, prospect catchers, hard pass. But if I had to bet on any of these four players, I'd bet on Gavin Williams. That's pretty
Let's jump to the next trade. This one is sort of an interesting one. One of these is a guy I had a big conversation with about yesterday. I'm curious to get your take on it. A couple days later, we got a trade between Bowl of Churios and Gunner Fight at the OK Corral. Gunner Fight sent a $4 David Festa in exchange for a $4 Michael Toglia. The guy I really want to talk about here is Festa, because there was a conversation going on in the Auto News Slack the other day about whether, basically about, you know, how good a keeper Festa was, given he doesn't really have a rotation spot locked up. We don't know when he's going to be up. And there was a whole bunch of, you know, bet on skills, not role conversation, which I generally agree with. My comment on Festa was, I don't think the reason to drop him right now is just because of the role. Like, you know, you go back and look at his track record and he's never been particularly good over an extended stretch in the minors. He wasn't as bad as his ERA, you know, he's sort of like Williams, 4.90 ERA, but a 3.76 FIP. So there's skill there. I get it. But I have a hard time looking at his history and thinking, yeah, this guy's about to break out.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a two-pitch pitcher. He does have three pitches. He throws the changeup 28% of the time. The stuff plus on that changeup was 72. And overall, it looks like the stuff is kind of average with a decent slider. He doesn't throw all that hard. He doesn't have a long track record. I'm not going to fall out of my seat for David Festa, but if I needed pitching and I had an excess of hitting or outfield or whatever it might be, I'd be fine giving up Michael Toglia for him. I think it sounds like kind of like a need steal, but in terms of just the player, like, I'm not super excited about David Festa.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the stuff plus and the change. He does have a slider and a 118 stuff plus, and his four seamer is a 107. Like, he has two good pitches. I think we've just seen, I don't feel super confident in a guy who has fastball, slider, change. If the change isn't good, you could get away with that, but then you need those two pitches to be great. And I'm not sure I think that's where he is.
No, and he hasn't gotten away with it so far. Like, yes, he did have a nice little stretch last year, but it's still a 1.32 whip and a 4.9 ERA with those three pitches. So,
yeah. What are your thoughts on Toglia? And, you know, got some power, plays in Colorado. That's really all you need, right?
Yeah, almost end of sentence. But no, he looks like a prototypical masher. He's going to have a 32% strikeout rate. It's what he had last year. It's what he had the year before that. Actually, it was 33, obviously, in limited sample. But he's a masher, and he plays at Coors. So, like, we could be looking at, I don't know, I kind of think of, like, what we were hoping we were going to get out of CJ Krohn when he went to Colorado. Like, I don't know, maybe a 230 average, but he's going to hit 35 homers and have like 70 RBI because nobody in that lineup can get on base.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Here's your wild stat for him is he had a 207 BABIP on the road, 333 at home. Totally expected, right? The 207 is crazy low, right? He'll be better than that on the road this year. But 333, like, Coors inflates BABIP by quite a bit. The crazy thing is that his home ISO was a 189, solid ISO, nothing great. And his home slugging was a 423, which is not particularly good. His road ISO was 286, and his road slugging was 488. So we think, you know, power hitter, he must be great at Coors and struggling on the. It was like exactly the opposite. He hit eight home runs in 228 plate appearances at home, and hit 17 home runs in 230 plate appearances on the road. Two more plate appearances, nine more home runs. I don't know what to make of that exactly. Like, I don't know if that's like, oh, he's actually not benefiting from cores that much. Like, but part of me wants to look at it and be like, his power at home has to get better.
You would assume so, but what a nightmare. Now, we're talking about an Otnu 4x4 right now, but if this was a weekly league, oh my God, like, what the heck? He's got six games of cores this week. There's no way I can bench this guy, but he also can't hit a core, so what the heck am I doing?
He is a guy who, you know, and look, I'm not sure I believe that home road split is something you can project into the future.
It sounds like a flip.
Yeah, but if you rostered him last year and basically used him based on what you expect the splits to be, we're like, yeah, he's my eighth outfielder and I'm just going to plug him in when he's at home. You missed everything good he did.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So there's that deal. The next deal that happened in that league, again, Bolichurio's involved in this. Sandlot Profits, the other team. Sandlot Profits giving up a $10 Alec Boehm, a $6 Michael Bush, a $3 Alec Burleson, and getting a $3 Liam Hendricks and a $10 Shane McClanahan. Huh. And I got to be honest, like, McClanahan and Boehm are the two guys in this trade I care about, but Boehm is a useful but not needle moving player for me. And it's like $10 Alec Boehm. I get why you'd want him. You could plug him into third base and feel good about it. But man, it feels like a pretty easy buy to get McClanahan for that. Not that Bush and Burleson are nothing. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of either.
Yeah, I kind of view that as you're getting three players that I'd keep for one player that I'd keep, because I'm not going to keep a $3 Liam Hendricks and a 4x4. But I still think the one player far outweighs the other three. I think Burleson's skill set is a weird one, and I think he's totally replaceable even at $3. And as much as I enjoyed Boehm's success last year and Bush's, I'm not out on Bush. I think he is worth bringing up. The upside of McClanahan is just so, like, it feels like Boehm is a floor player and McClanahan's a ceiling player, right? And I feel like McClanahan's ceiling is just so much more potentially useful than worth shooting for more than it is to bank Boehm.
I agree. This is to me a little bit like the Gavin Williams trade we just talked about, just dropped down, you know, 100 picks of ADP or something like that, right? Like, it's the same concept of, like, you're getting three guys. Like, the three guys I gave up for Williams are all interesting. They're all worth rostering. But I thought Williams was just the upside, and the potential there was just better. And I sort of feel that way looking at this. I have nothing against Bush or Burleson or Boehm. I think they're all fine. Just, I'm with you on McClanahan. And I'll be honest, I think Bush, I mean, we don't really know exactly what his role is going to be this year. However, he is now only first base eligible. Last year, he had a 335 OBP, a 440 slugging with 21 home runs and 567 plate appearances across 152 games. His projections from both Steamer and Oopsie are similar home run total, 21 from both of them, but in 50 more plate appearances because they expect him to play a little bit more, with a lower OBP and a lower slugging. If he hits those projections, 21 home runs, 321 or 322 OBP, 410 to 415, maybe 416 slugging, that's not a useful first baseman in Otnu 4x4. And he's only first base eligible. And if I go look at the Cubs depth chart, I don't sort of immediately see where else he gets playing time. Like, you know, we'll see whether or not Nico Horner is ready to start the season, but they seem pretty set with Horner and Swanson most of the year up the middle. Matt Shaw looks like he is going to get third base. I can't see why he wouldn't. They said today, I think, that Seiya Suzuki is basically a full-time DH, which puts us in a position where Bush is only really available for first base. And between now and opening day, like, it doesn't seem crazy impossible to me that they would go out and get Bregman or go out and get Pete Alonso. And then Bush might find himself in a bench pinch hitter type role. And he doesn't defend well enough anywhere to really justify that. It just feels like there's a lot of ways things can go wrong for Bush. And if he repeats last year, you're going to be disappointed. So I don't know. I'm sort of out on Bush, I think. Like you were saying like you're not out on him. I think I am.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the cost. In this situation, he's a $6 Bush. That's probably a cut for me. But if I see his name available at auction and I get him for a dollar, I'll be happy with that. I'll roll the dice there.
Yeah, I mean, for a buck, fine. I think, you know, it's also a situation where, like, this is the kind of guy where, yeah, a dollar at the end of auction totally makes sense. Unless the way your auction's gone, you've got three other first basemen on your roster, right? You kept a guy that you were excited about. You know, you kept a $14 Vinny Pascantino. You felt not great about him being your only guy, and so there was an opportunity to buy a $50 Vlad, and you bought a $50 Vlad, and then you added a, you know, I don't know, some other guy who's another interesting, potentially low-cost first baseman.
Josh Bell.
Josh Bell. Sure. Like, then you're not going to go get Bush also. You might want Bush more than Bell, but if you've already got him, like, you're just, that's just what it is. You're not going to go get Bush also. I don't know. I would be surprised if I end up with Bush on any of my roster.
Yeah, I he's not a player I can say I'm really, really targeting. I see the 11% barrel rate.
Yeah.
The 11% walk rate. And I'm thinking, like, all right, this is a guy who had a lot of potential. He was just constantly blocked in LA. He just demolished AAA, absolutely smoked the minor leagues. He got off to that hot start last year, and then it seemed like people adjusted. And I'm always curious to see, like, let's see him adjust back. We'll see. But I'm not selling a $10 Shane McClanahan to find out, especially if he costs $6.
So you and I made a trade in this league as well. You traded me a $7 Yiner Diaz and a $25 Christian Yelich for a $29 Logan Webb. You have told us on the show so many times that Logan Webb is overrated, not a guy you want. He's not worth the money. $29 isn't, it's not like I gave you a cheap Logan Webb. It's a pretty fair price Logan Webb here. And yet, I even offered you Pablo Lopez. The Pablo Lopez who you love and adore. He was out there. You could have had
him Pablo Lopez over
for cheaper. And you picked Webb. Let's talk about that a little bit.
So the players going to you. I already had a $5 Salvador Perez, and I was going to be content trading either Yiner or Sal Perez. I didn't care which one I kept. I just wanted to keep one and move on to the next thing to fix on my team. And then the $25 Yelich. I actually really like Yelich, and I'm kind of in your camp of like he could have a huge year. My team is just like really expensive. Like I want to run it back with both Yordan and Vlad, and that's going to cost me just those two players $107. So I was strapped for cash, and the $25 for Yelich, given his age and the back surgery, I just couldn't swing it. I'd rather spend the 20 to keep Jazz. So that's where that was. So I was perfectly fine giving up those players. And the rest of my rotation, before I got Logan Webb, my rotation was Tyler Glasnow, who's a walking injury, Michael King, who literally broke his elbow throwing a pitch, Tanner Bibee, who's like 5 years old, and Tanner Houck, who's been a good starting pitcher for basically half of one season. So I really needed somebody who was sustainable, gonna put in a bunch of innings. And so that would scream either Logan Webb or Pablo Lopez. And because the overwhelming majority of leagues that I play are 5x5, I would much prefer Pablo Lopez. But this is a new 4x4, and one of the four categories is one that I consistently seem to suck in, and that is home runs per nine innings. And there is no denying, as bad as Logan Webb is, as much as he should be a little league pitcher, one thing he does very, very well is not give up home runs. And so And the other thing he does well is consistently throw a lot of innings. So I'm kind of curing two things. I'm not good at that category. I'm locking in one of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher in that category. No disrespect to Framber Valdez. I don't know what his numbers suggested he was at. And I'm also getting a guy who threw 200 innings last year, is definitely primed to throw 200 again. When before I made this trade, my ace was a guy who had never pitched 140 innings before. So I do feel much better with my team. I'm willing to even pay up a little bit to keep Logan Webb. But now I'm going into the auction with over half a team to fill. I have 18 of 40 roster spots and I only have $86 to do it. So, we're going bargain hunting in that auction.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting one. For this deal, I think the only catcher I had on my roster was a $10 Logan Ohapi, who I'm an Ohapi fan, but $10 was pushing it. Diaz is both better and cheaper at $7. It felt like a easy opportunity to upgrade. We've talked about Yelich on the show before. Like I do think he's going to come back healthy. Like I still think that people are very focused on like, oh my God, he had back surgery, instead of being focused on he's been in back pain for like years, right? We've been hearing about his back issues forever. And so
still backs under the knife, man. That's such a,
I just think
dicey.
I guess we'll say is this, there is a chance that he's still going to be dealing with back pain, in which case he's just going to be the guy he's been, which means I'm going to miss time and he's going to, like, he'll miss some time and whatever. But I think there's a real chance he comes back actually healthy and we get, now he's a lot older than he was when he was MVP Christian Yelich, but we get the older version of that, right? There is going to be some falling off that has happened since then, but I think you get some of that power back. You still get a high OBP and high slugging. You get him hitting near the top of a decent lineup, I think. I'm not really sure what to make of that lineup. I think there's a chance for him to be really, really valuable. It gives me a little bit of it's a strange outfield now in that league, because I have the $25 Yelich, a $22 Teoscar Hernandez, a $19 Ian Happ, a $15 Riley Green, a $13 Spencer Steer. Those are my sort of five highest paid outfielders. And then I've got an $8 Carey Carpenter, $6 Matt Wallner, and $4 Parker Meadows. Plus I have a $5 Chase DeLauder in the minors. I think that's basically it. Yeah, I don't even really like that's it. And so I think all of those guys are keepers, but having five outfielders priced between $13 and $25 feels weird to me.
Is Spencer Steer, now you're a Steer guy. I'm very much not a Spencer Steer guy. Is Steer at $11 now that you have all those other outfielders? Is he a definite keep in 4x4?
That's a good question, I guess.
Because the 25 steals don't matter, and that's the only reason I think his ADP is as high as it is. He is going before Yelich in drafts. I know he has first base eligibility. I can't understand that one.
So keep in mind that in the ADP that we're looking at, it's going to be almost all 5x5, and he is like how many bases did he steal last year?
25,
right? So 20 homers, 25 stolen bases. The 225 average is pretty ugly, but I think the 260 BABIP is going to come back up. I look at him as a guy who, like, 2020 with a 245-ish average, like, that's going to go a long ways in 5x5. Now, in 4x4, I think, you regress that BABIP. He walked 11% of the time last year, 10% of the time the 2 years before that. Like, if he puts up that 240-ish average with that 10 or 11% walk rate, you're talking about like a 330-ish OBP, which is not some like world-beating, incredibly impressive number, but it's a solid on-base percentage with what should be 20 home runs and a bunch of runs scored hitting high up in a lineup that should score runs. That 330-ish on base percentage, just for context, let me look at, I'm pulling up, pulled up the wrong league. One moment. If I look at our league last year, it was my team. My team had a 331 OBP, and that was the fourth best OBP. So it gives you a sense of where Steer falls in, is like, he's a better than league average for this league on base percentage play, plus decent home runs, plus what should be a lot of runs.
But is he, I mean, that's league on base percentage. What about for his positions? Because first base and at least a corner outfielder is usually going to have a little bit of a better OBP.
But if he's basically my fourth or fifth outfielder, like that's a good on base percentage for your, like, if I think about where I expect my highest on base percentage to come from, first base, util, my top couple outfielders, third base are sort of the top half of my team. And then you've got like your second baseman, your shortstop, and your next three outfielders. And then you've got your middle infielder and your catcher, right? I mean, that's sort of the rough sorting of that. So he's in, you know, if he's not one of my top three outfielders, and I don't think he is. Like, if I look at my, go back to find that outfield again. If I look at my outfield for that team, where is it? I told you, yeah, here we go. Yelich, Teo Hernandez, Hap, and Riley Green are all ahead of him. And so he's basically my fifth outfielder. The bigger question might be, I guess, in terms of a keeper, is not, is he a viable fifth outfielder at that price, but is it worth spending that on him when I've got Carpenter, Walner, and Meadows on the bench? Would I be better off just mixing and matching those guys? Because the other piece of this is I have Josh Naylor at first base, Itak Paredes at third, and Royce Lewis is going to end up being my util at this point. And so I don't necessarily need those guys there.
If he's not your fifth outfielder, I think he hurts you. If he's your first baseman in this league or he's your utility, I don't think he's usually. This comes back to my issue with guys who are just not great players, and they get by in fantasy because they do things. Like he had 25 stolen bases and he gets to play in Cincinnati, so he looks good. This was a dude who played 158 games last year, and he had a 1.3 F-WAR and a 96 WRC+. I just think if Noelvi Marte is tearing it up and somehow the Reds stay healthy and this guy isn't like getting by doing his like gimmicky stuff, that like he could lose play time. And so I see that ADP that's earlier than Yelich, and I just like want to pull my hair out. I get it. Look, even if you had him last year, like 2025 in most fantasy leagues is going to be really, really valuable, especially if he's your first baseman, you're getting 25 steals there. I'm waiting for the bottom to fall out, and I think it's going to happen, and I don't think it's going to be pretty. I think this dude is a little bit more BABIP bad luck away or fly ball rate luck away from being utterly useless in fantasy. And so if he was $11 and I could mix and match instead, I think I'm going to do it. And I definitely don't want him as anything other than my fifth outfielder in this format.
I think you're too low on him. Cause you're like,
he's also, for what it's worth, he's projected to bat sixth in that lineup. And I don't even think that lineup's that good. Like he's going to bat behind Fraley and Stevenson. Like,
I think
be a lot of opportunity.
My thing with him though, is like he had a 10.3% home run per fly ball rate and a 260 BABIP last year. I don't think either of those are in danger of negative regression. Like I think what he did last year, barring a skills change right now, maybe he strikes out more, maybe he starts walking less, maybe he doesn't hit the ball as hard or whatever, but if he does what he did last year, his results are going to get better. Like I would say with the same skills, I would expect more like 22, 23 home runs instead of 20 and a 20 point increase in BABIP.
But like, I don't know why. Like, the barrel rate is just 6.4%. The exit velocity is 88 miles an hour. Like, in some ways, he was the same player he was in 2023. Like, you can almost just turn this around and say, rather than he was unlucky last year, he was just lucky in 2023. This is not a player with a long any track record of like sustained success.
Fair enough. Let's take one more quick break. And then when we come back, we'll take a look at a couple more trades before we wrap things up. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We are continuing to power through some trades. There were also some trades in our other Fantrax league. Now, this one is our head-to-head league that Pete correctly reminded me is daily while the other one isn't. I was all confused. So a couple of trades that went down recently in that one. Let's start with the one that you made. That's another one where we had a new manager come in, and that new manager gave you the second pick in the draft. 1.2.
You make me seem devious.
Yeah, well, you know, a little bit. He gave you the second pick in the draft and a pick in the 13th round. You gave him also a 13th round pick and a 21st round pick, along with Michael King, Michael Bush, O'Neal Cruz, and Bryson Stott. Now, we talked before about Bush, who you and I both agreed is sort of a guy you could take or leave. I don't think Stott, like, there was a point at which Stott was a really interesting guy in the fantasy world. It was like, oh, there's all this upside. He's going to be in Philly. Blah, blah, blah. Like, he's fine. Like, I like him more than Bush because he's like, you can at least slot him in as your second baseman to feel good about it. Whereas I'm not sure you can do that with Bush at first base. Cruz and King. Cruz is what, like a, he was like a mid-teens round pick, right?
No, King is a last Cruz. Round pick. That's, oh, Cruz. 11th, I think.
11th. And King, you're right, is last round. I don't know. I'm curious, from your perspective, do you feel like you gave up enough to get that first pick?
Well, first, because of the veiled accusation on my character.
I am not accusing you of anything. I'm just commenting on what happened.
So, the conversation with this manager, Tyler, who's lovely, by the way, I enjoyed chatting with him. I was going to trade him Michael Bush and my 15th round pick for his 15th round pick. Like, that deal was about to happen, and that was going to be it. And I would have realized eventually that I can't do that trade because I was going to use my 15th round pick to keep Tyler Glasnow, so it would have been useless. But we were done. I literally, like, I'm looking at the chat I had with him. I said, I just sent it. Haha. He said, I saw you list several arms that I want for a bat. I don't have a bat that you want for sure, but would you do picks for any of those guys I mentioned? I have pick 1.2. That seems to be getting some interest with some managers, but I'm trying to decide which direction to take my team based on what I can get in trades before the keeper deadline. And I said, that pick is so valuable, I don't even really know what to offer for it. What did you have in mind? So, like, I was not the snake in the nest looking to pry the second overall pick. It just came to me.
Yeah.
Now, did I give up enough? It all depends on who you ask. Look, our fearless leader, Nick Pollock, has Michael King as the 9th best starting pitcher in all of baseball. Michael King was absolutely disgusting last year. Over 200 strikeouts. I think the ERA was under 3. He's everything the Padres were hoping to get for Juan Soto. He is an ace. So if you believe Michael King is an ace, if you're a Nick Pollock and you can keep Michael King for a 28th round pick this year and a 27th round pick next year and a 26th round pick the year after that, I could understand giving up the second overall pick in the draft. Would I do it? No, because I value picks tremendously. I'm not gonna do that. But that was obviously the piece. I think it's more the side pieces probably weren't good enough. But to each his own. I don't know what else to say about it from there.
Yeah, I mean, just as so I was also talking to him because he was shopping that pick. So, and, you know, to your point, this wasn't just like you snuck up and tried to take it. Like, he was actively looking to move that first pick because he wanted to inject some talent into his team, which I get. I was talking with him about a first round pick swap because I was also going to send him Vlad, who he would then be able to keep for a late first round pick, and I would get an early first round pick, and then there was a bunch of other guys going with it. And we just couldn't really get anywhere with that. He basically decided he didn't think his team... Basically what he said was if he thought his team could compete, Vlad would have been super appealing, but he thinks he needs to do more of a rebuild. So we started talking about, like, Brenton Doyle, Kerry Carpenter, Alec Bohm. And just... I think the reality is I could have done a lot better than I think you did with the secondary pieces there. I think Carpenter, like, if Doyle, who is going as like a fifth round pick or something like that for a last round cost, is my headliner, King is a better headliner. I personally,
in my opinion,
what?
Substantially, yeah. In my opinion. I don't know if ADP would support that, but I would much rather have King.
I don't disagree. Doyle. I think the challenge becomes, like, I don't think Bush or Stott are all that interesting. I think, like, a Kerry Carpenter is much more interesting than either of those guys. I think Alec Bohm maybe less so. I mean, not less less so than Carpenter, but I still like him more than them. And then I think a lot of this comes down to what is O'Neill Cruz? Because if O'Neill Cruz for an 11th round pick turns out to be a guy that you keep as a 10th, a 9th, and 8th over the next few years, that's great. We just still haven't, like, I still feel like with Cruz, there's a lot of what we want him to be, what we've seen him show flashes of being rather than what he is. And that I think is sort of where this, to me, that's where this trade hinges. If Cruz is a star and he's a guy who is an anchor in your outfield in a positive way for years to come, like last year, you know, basically a full season, 21 home runs, 22 stolen bases, 259 average. Like the results are not super different from what we just talked about with Spencer Steer. The skill and the profile is very different. And I guess the question is, how much do you believe that talent level, that those raw skills translate into, you know, pushing him closer to 30-30 or doing a better job of maintaining 20-20 or something like that? Because that's I think where this hinges. If he is a long-term keeper, this looks like a really good deal for Tyler. If Cruz ends up looking expensive as a 10th round keeper next year, then it's a very different conversation.
Yeah, I think that's right. Because O'Neill Cruz is capable of rattling off remember that season Luis Robert had 2 years ago where it was like 40-30 or something absurd. And it all fell apart for him the next season. And he's a whole different case, but like similar situation for O'Neill Cruz where like the supporting cast is not great, but he's so skilled and talented. I think that the better word is raw skill, right? He has so much raw skill that he could potentially just go off for a couple of months and the final stat line looks amazing and you're happy with it. That's definitely within the realm of potential outcomes. I think looking at this trade and really thinking about it, if you could not make trades during the season and you were rebuilding, then I think this is the move. Would he have been better off going for a wider array of players? Like Brenton Doyle's not as good. Clearly Kerry Carpenter not as good, but like something similar, getting a lot of pieces like that and just flipping first round picks and then during the season trading Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for a lot more than what he got here. Like I think that could have been a possibility, but you know, I mean, there's risks in playing such a long-term game. I think if you like Michael King clearly as much as Tyler does, as much as Nick does, as much as I do to an extent, then it does make sense, even if O'Neill Cruz does kind of fall flat a little bit.
Yeah, totally fair. I think I'm with you. I think the value of using that first round pick or of trading for a guy like Vlad and keeping him and then being able to trade for multiple picks, multiple pieces later in the year. I think there's a chance Tyler would have ended up like, I'm trying to remember what I offered with Vlad, because that would be helpful for me to be able to actually give a real like comparison. I at one point it said Kerry Carpenter, Alec Bohm, and Vlad plus multiple pick upgrades for the first round swap. I think like I would rather have Carpenter and Bohm than Bush and Stott for sure. Multiple pick upgrades, depends what, you know, we never got around to figure out what those pick upgrades would look like. That plus what he gets for Vlad in June, let's say. I do think there's a case to be made that at no point was he to get anything like King. That was his chance to get King. Probably not. And so that makes sense. But yeah, it's an interesting trade.
And honestly, if Michael King has two more years, just let's say just two more years, this year and 2026, like his 2024, I think this was a great trade for Tyler.
Yeah.
Like the value of getting a Cy Young caliber pitcher for free for the next 2 years is like, that's huge. Now King has to go do that. He's done it all of once in his career and he's already 29 years old. That's not a guarantee. But if he does, that's like all it takes for this, I think, to be a win of a trade for him and for me, because I'm trying to compete now.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Well, we've been going a good long time on these trades, a lot of stuff going on. But there was one other thing you had asked me earlier today that I told you I would talk to you about on the show, so we should do that quickly. And that is, you were asking, with Tanner Scott getting signed in L.A., because, you know, everybody gets signed in LA. That's just what baseball is right now. With Tanner Scott being signed in LA, your question was, is a $3 Michael Kopech just no longer worth it in an Otto-New head-to-head points league? And I think this comes down to a question of what you think Kopech is. Because the Dodgers haven't really been a team that's consistently been like, this is our closer, and he gets the ninth inning. And so I think Scott and Kopech and probably some others in that bullpen will share the load. I think Scott, I'd be surprised if Scott doesn't end the year with the most saves, but I would bet against Tanner Scott being a 40 save guy and bet more on him being around 30 and Kopech being at 10 and somebody else being at 5 and right, like that kind of thing. And I think that both of them will get a decent number of holds, right? Like Kopech will get more holds than King or than Scott. But I think they'll both get some holds. And so I think it comes down to like for that $3 price, if you think that Kopech is a good reliever, like if you think he's one of the better relievers, he's still a steal at that price. The fact that he's not the closer, like I don't really care if he's a closer or not, because over the course of the season, it's not that huge a difference. It would be if you were talking about like a $12 Michael Kopech, right? Because I think the thing that I've sort of had to wrap my head around over time is that it is one thing to note that, you know, saves and holds are only one point different in value, right? If a guy goes out and throws a save and another guy goes out and throws a hold, like, that's either one of those is fine, and there's not a huge difference between those two things. It's not nothing, but it's not a huge difference. However, your top saves guys, Helsley had 49, Clase had 37, Finnegan had 38, Suarez had 36. You had a total of 8 guys over 30. Holds are... Well, actually, look, last year, so historically, I was thinking holds were a lower count, but they're not really. You don't have anyone getting up to like 47, 49, but you still have 8 guys at 30 plus. So I think you lose a little bit of upside where, like, if you had thought Kopech was going to be the man closing every time out for the Dodgers, he might have been looking at 50 saves. Now he's probably looking at 5 to 10 saves and 25 to 30 holds. It's going to be less valuable than it would have been. But I think as long as he's a good pitcher, he'll still be plenty valuable in that role. And like I said, if he was a $15 closer and he was, you know, you were counting on those big numbers from him, and now it's like, this is going to cost me, let's say, you know, 1 point per hold plus another, you know, 10 fewer total saves and holds, like that's a big difference. That might push him down, but I don't think it makes any difference to me at $3. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's that does make sense. And I think if you were feeling that way about Kopech even before the Tanner Scott signing, like if you were feeling he was just the set closer, I had my reservations about that anyway once they brought back Blake Treinen. So, okay, that does make me feel better because I have a hard time with bullpens in these leagues where like it really is hard to decide how to value them. There's so many roster spots, there's so much money, and it's not, you know, the most clear thing in the world. So $3 with Kopech, I want to go into the auction with at least one reliever. He's basically my only option, so I'm just going to suck it up and do it. But it would be nice if he did take over that closer's role.
I think
no offense, Tanner Scott.
The bigger question with Kopech to me, like his 24 innings with the Dodgers were great. His 43.2 innings with Chicago weren't. Like he wasn't a very good Otto New reliever last year for most of the season. His overall line, when you sort of mush it all together, is fine, but it's not exciting. Like he put up, so in his time with the White Sox, he was worth 4.89 points per inning pitch, which is an easy cut. That guy is worth nothing at that price point. His time with the Dodgers, he was 9.66 points per inning pitch. That, by the way, was with 6 saves, 8 holds. I think the balance shifts more towards, you know, 3 saves, 8 holds over a similar time frame. But fine. 6 saves, 8 holds, 9.66. Like that is an elite reliever. The overall mix at 6.59 is fine. Totally worth rostering. Nothing special. I think my takeaway on this is I think there's good reason to believe he's at least a fine reliever and you'll be fine at $3. And if by chance he pitches as well as he did, like if the Dodgers figured something out with him and he's just that good now that he's with the Dodgers, then you're going to be ecstatic to have him at $3.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Hope you are all getting through your keeper deadlines, making some tough decisions. If you got questions, you can find us on Blue Sky at this point. The show is still on Twitter at Keeper Cup, but honestly, we don't use that very much. You'll find me on Blue Sky at Chad Young. Pete, where should they look for you at this point? Anywhere?
No, please don't look for me anywhere.
So yeah, you can hit me up on Blue Sky anyways. You can up the show, like I said, on Twitter, and we'll do our best to get back to you. But for now, have a good couple weeks, and we'll be back with you, boy, in early February. Have a good one.